We've got Ashley Campbell here in the studio, Orange County Conservative, with about 100,000 different things that we could potentially talk about. How are you?
Which executive order do
we start with? Okay, the one we agreed on was refugees, right?
That's the big one
that everyone is talking about.
Sure.
Yeah, so, okay, I've got notes, and I've got a page full of notes and four different things, like, boxed off in big letters, but I'll let you start. Where do you want to go with this? If you're just joining this conversation, this is the executive order that suspends refugee admissions for 4 months, period. Suspends Syrian refugees indefinitely until further notice. Cuts the refugee quota to 50,000, but that's just sort of backing from what Obama did last year.
Right. I think it's been that figure is pretty comparable
is
to
what the INA says. So, yeah.
Right. The past couple of administrations, in any case, have hovered around that number.
Right.
That's not unusual.
So that got a lot of play, but that's actually that one's actually kind of standard. It's the suspension of admissions that everyone's talking about. So you're
right. Right. Well, as probably everybody who's listening already knows, I mean, there are seven countries that are affected by an executive order that President Trump passed on Saturday, I believe.
Friday.
Yeah. All right. Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen.
Yep.
And, of course, there have been a lot of protests at airports around the country. You've seen hashtag Muslim ban everywhere on social media.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of discontent about it. And I feel like some of it is deserved and some of it is not.
Yeah.
Essentially, the content of the executive order, I don't think is so out of line with previous administration's actions on refugee policy or immigrant or non-immigrant entry into the United States. But I can only speak for myself, but I've seen in a lot of conservative media outlets and just individual conservatives that I know, we all seem like we agree that the rollout of this couldn't have been more disastrous.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of criticism on both sides.
So and the rollout is a significant thing, partly because of the wording of the executive order itself, which was unclear and led to a lot of concerns about implementation, and also because that could have easily been addressed if they had just talked to someone before releasing the executive order. And that's, to me, the more significant thing because, okay, you have one poorly written executive order. You learn that for next time. But I don't think they've learned their lesson about not running things past people who have some sort of knowledge about how to do this sort of thing.
Right. No, I think that's not a bad point that you're making. And it does concern me as well because, I've defended the White House advisor, Steve Bannon, in the past. Do I think he's a Nazi? No. Do I think
that's
he has
a low level of defense, though?
But that's what I basically in the past have defended
him for
not.
It's bad for Steve Bannon that's the level of
right.
Yeah.
However,
uh-huh.
I do think he definitely has the ear of the president, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think has had some influence in not going through the normal channels of, how executive orders have to go to basically every department and get, legal advice and go through a real process before they're implemented. And it clearly didn't happen with this one. And Trump's tweet about this, as much as I don't like to talk about his tweets, was that, how can you do that and then, and not give warning to people that this is coming and have it because it's supposed to be a national security issue. But still, I just feel like I felt really sorry for the people who are affected by this, who are, already on their way to the country, green card holders, mm-hmm. even, and, that are permanent legal residents. who were detained at airports. And, you know, hopefully most of them weren't detained very long. But there should have been some communication to those people that this was going to happen. Contact your, I don't know, consulate or whoever they needed to contact and make sure that when they're coming back into the country, that they are, you know, good to go when they land.
And that was something that was a concern all weekend long. And it came out over the weekend that the inclusion of green card holders wasn't an accident, that there were people who wanted the executive order to include green card holders, permanent legal residents. And they've since walked that back a little bit, but that wasn't an accidental, poorly worded executive order. That was, for a lot of people in the administration, what they wanted.
Right. Well, the Department of Homeland Security, I think a little bit after the executive order came out, said that was intentional, although they then later walked it back.
Yeah.
So, you know, the executive order was at once too broad and some people have criticized it for being too narrow. Does it include enough countries? Does it include the right countries? I don't know. Honestly, I mean, I think that some people have brought up the fact that, well, you know, the 9/11 hijackers were from, I think, Egypt and Saudi Arabia.
Mostly, yeah.
And they're not on the list. Why aren't they on the list? Well, hopefully... The countries that are on this list are on the list because they're where threats can come from in the future, whereas, you know, those countries may have, the people there, the threat may have been more intense in the past. So it's hard for anyone to say, what the rationale is. I wish the administration had been more transparent about, how this list was chosen. And, you know, how it's going to affect people there, as well as, I feel that, although I feel very compassionate for the people that are displaced in places like Syria, I don't necessarily feel like it's the United States or the West's responsibility to take all of the refugees in. I think there's a good opportunity to resettle them in other countries in the Middle East, because there's been plenty of research and policy papers shown that you can help about 10 times as many people with the same amount of money if they're resettled in safe zones or in locations closer to Syria rather than bringing them all the way overseas. And I don't disagree that it's part of our responsibility, meaning the United States, should be our responsibility to have a humanitarian effort there, because I feel like it's kind of partially our fault in the first place that Syria and Libya especially are in such chaos right now. So I don't disagree that we should help them, refugees from there, resettle. Does it necessarily have to be here or in Europe? No, not necessarily.
We seem to be doing a good job helping them resettle in Canada right now.
Well, right. I guess, you know, that's... Well, yeah. Canada
it's also the case
policies.
That there are a lot more refugees in just focusing on Syria. There are a lot more refugees who are leaving Syria and going to refugee camps in Jordan and just across the border in other countries than the United States has ever intended to take. Like, what was it under Obama last year? It was 11,
about 13,000.
13,000, yeah, in 1 year. That was far, far less than the number of refugees that there are in Syria. So no one's saying, let's take them all. They're saying, let's take some percentage, and Trump's walking that back even.
Well, what I was trying to wander into this point, which was that I wish, you know, not only had the administration just included more details, had done, you know, a little bit more interdepartmental work on the executive order before they rolled it out, but also, you know, afterward, we found out that there had been discussions with at least Saudi Arabia, maybe another country or two that looks like they're going to provide safe zones for refugees. So, you know, when the executive order came out, it looked more like, well, you know, whatever, those people are just, you know, out of luck. But in fact, the administration was working on ways to resettle refugees in neighboring countries. So it wasn't necessarily leaving them high and dry, but nobody found out about that until later.
What constitutes a safe zone?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Because if that's a refugee camp, that's not a permanent solution either. But if it's something more than that.
No, it's not. It's not a permanent solution. But I think that it's generally just an area that's protected by, a lot of them are run by the UN that exists right now, but are support financed by a lot of other countries that are basically. I think that they're basically camps, as you said, that are not meant to be permanent solutions, but are meant to be a place where people can live and you know, possibly become permanent residents of the country that hosts them. That possibility exists.
That was one of the ones that I mean, I was at covering the first rally in Durham, downtown Durham, on Friday, and there was one guy there, and we played his speech on the air yesterday because it's a really powerful speech. He was Somali and fled Somalia into a camp in Kenya in the mid-90s, and he was there for 20 years in that camp, describing you know, there's no work to be had because you're just basically living in a camp, basically. It's fairly dangerous and you're just stuck there waiting to get out. And he was in process with the U.S. government. His application was accepted for review by the U.S. government in 2007. He'd already been in the camp for more than 10 years. And it was another 9 years of the process before he finally got to Durham. So he finally made it to Durham in 2016, and now he's here. But it was 20 some odd years since he fled Somalia.
Yeah.
And that's the process that Donald Trump now says is not strong enough, which seems to me to be
right.
Insane.
Well, I don't think that the vetting process needs to be longer.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be better. As to what that looks like, I'm not an expert in that, so it's not my place to say. If there are people who can't be vetted, though, I feel like, I'm sorry, but they can't be accepted into the United States. But
I mean, what's bad about it now?
Bad about the vetting
process? Yeah, what needs to be fixed?
Well, I do think that it takes quite a long time. I mean, I've heard figures like, you know, 2 years is the average for Syrian refugees.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a little bit too long. This is a pretty specific criticism, I guess you could say, but it ties into some of the anger that protesters have exhibited about this executive order. They say that it's a Muslim ban and that it will favor Christians because it contains language that says that persecuted religious minorities will be given preference, which is not a departure from normal, you know, vetting of whatever are considered acceptable refugees to consider for resettlement in the United States. Religious persecution is a factor, has always been
primary
a factor.
Yeah.
Right. And so that that's nothing new, but it seems like when the Syrian crisis started in 2011, that the Obama administration was accepting recommendations for refugees from UN-run refugee camps that Christians were afraid to live in for some of the same reasons that you described as a Somali refugee, that they're dangerous places, that in the camps they were persecuted. And so they wanted to avoid the camps as well. So it was kind of a catch-22 for Christians, which contributed to there being a really small number of Christians that were accepted as refugees, which they constitute about 10% of the Syrian population. But, I mean, it was just a tiny percentage, far less than that, that the United States took in compared to Muslim refugees from Syria since 2011. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's part of the vetting process seems to be that those who are persecuted for religions or other reasons are not, that is not weighing into the process as heavily as it should. Mm-hmm. So that's one factor I know about, but I don't think that it's, you know, getting back to the heart of this executive order. Yeah. I think that's what it's meant to figure out, really, is just to institute a temporary ban and come up with whatever is the best process for vetting refugees.
Speaking with Ashley Campbell, I want to get back to something you said, and we got to wrap up in a few minutes, but I want to get back to something you said a few minutes ago, which is that this is akin to things that previous presidents have done. And a number of people have gone back and found instances in fairly recent memory where presidents have either dialed back on the refugee admissions program in general or narrowly restricted certain countries. There was Jimmy Carter who did it immediately after, I guess, during the Iran hostage crisis. There was George W. Bush who did it immediately after 9/11, and then refugee admissions were down for a couple of years after that. Most recently, there was Barack Obama in 2011 slowed the process down from accepting refugees from Iraq because there were a couple of Iraqi refugees who had been arrested in the U.S. For plotting some attack, so slowed the process down from Iraq. But in all three of those cases, they're responding to something. Like, there is a crisis. Something has happened. We're responding to either a disaster or a foreign policy crisis or a potential crisis that fortunately got prevented. But either way, they're responding to something. And this is the sort of executive order that you would expect from a president. You kind of got it from Bush in 2001 in the aftermath of a major disaster. And, I mean, I know if you ask any liberal, they'll tell you that there was a major disaster 11 days ago. But in terms of an actual major disaster, this is when you would expect an executive order like this. This is when you would expect the president to think about an executive order like this. The fact that Trump is doing this now when there's no disaster, no crisis, no apparent immediate threat that we're aware of, and Homeland Security has always been pretty good about saying there's an immediate threat, you know.
Oh, right, that scale.
The scale, sure. Right. Start taking off your shoes at the airport again. But we haven't gotten that at all. Yeah. So this is a preemptive declaration that there is a crisis and we need to do something about it. And this is the sort of governing in permanent crisis mode that we've seen from other countries' leaders in the past, and we've looked at that and thought, oh, thank God we don't have that here, and now we've got it here. And that's the scary thing to me.
Right. Well, you know, I can see that side of the argument, but I would counter that by saying that, well, first of all, who's to say that this will actually contribute to keeping us safe? I'm always skeptical when anything's done for the sake of quote-unquote national security.
Safety, and you can take the word refugee out, like, oh, we don't mind refugees, we're just worried that people will disguise themselves as refugees and come in here and try to do something bad. Take the word refugee out and replace it with Christian, and it's exactly the same argument that makes exactly the same amount of sense, but no one's making that argument because refugees are easier to target than Christians are.
I'm not sure I follow you quite there.
Well, suppose someone were to come along and say, well, I have no problem with Christians, but we can't let Christians into the country because what if terrorists disguise themselves as Christians and then come in and do something bad? It's the same argument. But take the word refugee out and put Christian in, now it's obviously ridiculous, and it's the same level of ridiculous if you make it with refugees.
I think hypothetically, I understand what you're saying, but we know that terrorists, you know, like ISIS and others, are trying to infiltrate into the ranks of refugees and other types of immigrants, because that's what they said that their strategy is. And we've seen them do this in European countries already successfully and carry out attacks. And a lot of attacks, fortunately, have been foiled. And we know that there are people who are, who already here, who seek to leave the U.S. and travel to some of these countries and be trained in terrorist, ideology and then come back here and carry out attacks. And I would also agree that probably the most danger we have to face are from people that are already here. Maybe not necessarily people that are coming from these countries in the future, but as I said, hopefully this is meant to foresee threats from the future. So I think that it is preemptive, because I think that we can learn lessons from what Europe has experienced in recent years, because they have seen people who were disguised as refugees come in and carry out attacks. And, I think that, or I hope rather, that the administration will take a look at their policies, try to figure out what works for them and what didn't. And whenever this 90-day window is up, or 120-day window, or, hopefully it won't be any longer than that for refugees, that they'll have a policy that is, comprehensive and works to negate some of the shortcomings that we've seen allow attacks in Europe.
We got to wrap up. Ashley Campbell, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.